Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world, welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, on the Monday morning edition. It is officially Halloween, and all of the little trick-or-treaters, I'm sure, will be out today. But what I want to talk to you about today is a lot of things. The name of my program is very important, and I want to say this every time I do a broadcast, because this program is the heart and soul for human rights in Iran. Iranians are some of my dearest friends in all of the world. But the heart and soul message of the Cross in the Desert is finding truth. It is finding peace. It is finding salvation in Christ. Thus, the image of a cross in the desert. I want to talk to you about that this morning. I want to do something a little bit different every program. I talk about political things, of course. The election is central to my program now for the last month or so. And I want to talk about Iranian events and things that are happening in Iran with the treatment of political prisoners. But this morning, before I get to all of those important, groundbreaking news issues, the most important soul and heart of the message of the cross in the desert is about Christ. And this morning I want to talk about that to you. My audience varies. It's very diverse. A lot of Christians, a lot of Iranians, some Muslims, people from all over the world. And so the universal message that the world needs to hear is love. In the midst of a culture and chaos of hatred and murder and violence, the central message that everyone needs to hear is the message of love and truth. And there is no greater love, no greater irresistible love in the world than the love of Christ. I want to talk to you about that this morning before I venture in to the issues of Iran and the issues of the election. The Bible is filled with messages, promises of love and truth. And as I mentioned, the greatest irresistible force in the universe is the irresistible love of God. The word that comes to my mind this morning is craving. What are the things that you crave? Now, for me, I crave spaghetti. I can't tell you how much I love the taste of really good meat sauce over pasta, thus spaghetti. And any place that I go, any restaurant that I'm in, I always have to have extra meat sauce. So I crave that. That is something that my taste buds go completely wild over. But there is something even greater than spaghetti that our heart craves after, that the soul craves after, and that is the presence and the intimacy of God. And Jesus said on one occasion, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never thirst again. Whoever comes to me will never hunger." And Jesus said, when you come to me, I'm that bread of life that your heart and soul desires, like spaghetti with me. But there is something that God gives to you and me that will satisfy the craving and the longing of our soul. And it's the Word of God. You can hear the echo of the cries of things that we crave all throughout the Bible. But this morning I want to read to you from Psalm 63. Rich really is in my book, The Cross in the Desert, that talks a lot about the title. It is that craving, that yearning for the presence of God in one's life that nothing else will satisfy. And David, who was a great Hebrew songwriter, wrote profound songs, Hebrew songs, and one of them was when he was in the wilderness of Judah. And David was craving presence of God. I want to read that to you this morning. Psalm 63. David cries out, "O God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you in this parched and weary land where there is no water." You see, David is saying that I have a craving for something more than even water, something my body is longing for, and that is God. And he goes on to say, "I have seen you in your sanctuary and gazed upon your power and glory. Your unfailing love is better than life itself. How I praise you. I will praise you as long as I live, lifting up my hands to you in prayer. You satisfy me more than the richest feast. I will praise you with songs of joy." David is describing the craving I'm talking about. His body, his soul, his whole being was craving for the presence of God that nothing else would satisfy. He said, "Your unfailing love is better than life itself." What is it about that love that is such an attraction to our heart and soul? Well, the Beatles sang about it years ago, "All you need is love." But I'm not talking about a worldly, temporary love. I'm talking about an unconditional, unfailing love. And David says, "As long as I live, I will lift my hands up in prayer to you. You satisfy me more than the richest feast." Think about it. What are the things you crave for? And what are the things that satisfy you? David says, "The satisfaction of knowing you is better than the most delectable, delicious aroma and feast." This morning, if you are craving this intimacy with Jesus, you are craving this presence of God, I want you to hear this song from Matt Redman. He is an outstanding worship leader. And he talks about what I'm saying to you this morning from Psalm 63. This is a wonderful song, rich in such lyrics. I want you to listen carefully to the words. And as you listen, let the unconditional love of God just soak your inner being. This is Matt Redman, and "I Need You Now" on The Cross in the Desert.
Desert ground in a dry I need you now, just like a river as it reaches for the sea, just like the song it needs the sound of melody. I need you now, just like the desert needs the blessing of the rain, just like the wind to waiting for the sun again. I need you now, just like a river.
The exceptional music and talent of Matt Redman and I Need You Now. Is that the cry of your heart? And God will meet you exactly where you're at. He will restore you. He will heal you. He will bless your life. And the imagery of living water is exactly what Jesus talked about. To the woman at the well, he said, I am the thirst. I am the water that you need, the living water that will give you life, that will give you freedom. So I hope this morning that you have connected with that irresistible love of the universe through Christ, because he will meet you right where you're at. I want to talk to you about the hopelessness that goes on in Iran. And it's a current story. It's about Golrakh Ebrahimi. She is going to have to serve 6 years in Evin prison. Why? You might ask, if you know anything about the cross in the desert, you know that I report on the stories, the hopeless situations of Iranians. This young girl, her husband is already serving time in prison as an activist, and the Iranian regime cannot wait to just punish lives for their freedom is non-existent there. She is spending 6 years in Evin prison for having an unpublished fictional story they found in her home. Now think of that in my situation. I'm a writer, I'm an author, and I'm writing on different subjects. And here comes the government bursting through the doors of my living room, grabbing me, imprisoning me, and chaining me for writing a story that hasn't even been published yet. Well, let me read this to you. It's unbelievable. Iranian judges have ordered a young female writer and activist to serve a 6-year jail term for writing an unpublished fictional story about a stoning to death event in Iran. Golrakh Ebrahimi Ari received a phone call on Tuesday from judicial officials ordering her to Evin prison in Tehran, where her husband, Arash Sadeghi, a prominent student activist, is already serving a 19-year sentence. Ebrahimi Ari told Voice of America's Persian network this week that she had been sentenced to 5 years in prison for, quote, insulting Islamic sanctities and 1 extra year for spreading propaganda against the ruling system. They haven't issued a written summons, she said in a Skype interview. They called me using the telephone of one of my friends, David Cameron. They had gone to his shop to arrest him, and they called me from there to summon me. Amnesty International said that Ebrahimi Ari's plight was linked to a fictional story that the authorities discovered in 2014 when they ransacked the couple's house in Tehran and confiscated their belongings. The charges against Golrakh Ebrahimi Ari are ludicrous, said Philip Author, Amnesty's research director for its Middle East and North America program. These charges are ludicrous. She is facing years behind bars simply for writing a story, and one which was not even published. She is effectively being published for using her imagination. Stoning to death is one of Iran's most controversial punishments, often used against women accused of having an illicit relationship outside of marriage. It sparked an unprecedented global outrage in 2010 in reaction to the high-profile case of Sakina Mohammadi Ashantani, a woman sentenced to death by stoning for adultery. Under pressure, Iran ultimately said it would not use the punishment at that time against Ashtiani, who was also accused of alleged complicity in the murder of her husband, but it is not clear whether she is still in prison or has been freed. Now, Luther goes on to say, instead of imprisoning a young woman for peacefully exercising her human rights by expressing her opposition to stoning in this story she wrote, the Iranian authorities should focus on abolishing this punishment, which amounts to torture. It is appalling that Iran continues to allow the use of stoning and justifies it in the name of practicing morality. Now, this was an unpublished story that Golrakh had in her home, and they consider that propaganda, speaking out against the regime. This was a story she wrote in opposition to a stoning incident that was going to take place in 2010, but a lot of international pressure stopped this from happening. Thank God for that. The point being is that she has done nothing but voice her mind, use her imagination. But in Iran, remember, that is non-existent. You're not allowed to use your imagination. You're not allowed to have happiness and freedom and to write anything, even if it's unpublished, that is disagreeing with the Islamic regime in Iran. This is the result of that. It's very, very sad. In another somewhat related incident, lately in Iran, dual citizens have been arrested and imprisoned. The case with Nazanin Ratcliffe, who lives in the UK, who went to visit her mother in April of this year, has been in prison since then simply because she's an Iranian dual citizen. She had a citizenship in Iran as well as the UK. This incident that's just recent with the Iranian-American, it shows the pattern here that Iran is using. Two Iranian-Americans, a father and son, have been sentenced to 10 years in prison in Iran, according to a report published Tuesday by Miznan, the Iranian judiciary's news service. Businessman Simiak Namazi and his father Bekir Namazan, who both hold dual citizenship, have been in custody in Iran and were sentenced on charges of spying for the United States. Simiak Namazi was arrested 12 months ago while visiting Iran from Dubois in the United Arab Emirates, where he lives. His detention signaled the enduring danger for dual nationals in Iran despite recent improved ties between the Republic and the West. So this is just unbelievable. And this continues to happen with Iranians that have dual citizenships. This kind of treatment is they will accuse them of spying, they will arrest them and put them in prison. And it's just another example that there is no freedom in Iran. It's horrible, and this will continue because Iran feels as though since they have this nuclear deal with the West that they can do anything they want with dual citizenship people in Iran. Reza is another 46-year-old Iranian-American who is now imprisoned in Iran, acting against national security, posting something on Facebook as an American here in opposition to the Iranian regime. And he posted this back in 2009 during the presidential elections when there was an uproar and violence. And they will do anything they can to do what they did to Saeed Abedini, and to the Washington Post reporter, to Amir Hikmati, the Iranian-Canadian. They will do everything they can to imprison and then ask for a ransom. And they feel as though now they have the upper hand because of the nuclear deal. Well, what we need to do here, we need to speak out and pray for Golrakh and for the Iranian-Americans who are imprisoned in Iran unjustly against their will. And this is what I do here on the Cross in the Desert. You will see postings on my Facebook page that will talk about their plight for freedom in Iran. And so I ask and pray that you will visit my Facebook page, read their stories, and pray for them, that they will have hope and freedom from the unjust treatment that they're receiving in Iran. What I want to do now is I want to cross over to the biggest story in this election that hit the news wires, if you will, or the internet, if we could be more specific. This past Friday, FBI dropped a bombshell on the Clinton campaign, and I have liberal friends that are trying to say, oh, this is not a reopening of the investigation. These are some sort of emails somehow related possibly to Hillary on Huma Abedin's computer or her internet or her cell phone. And it's not a big deal. They're trying to downplay this. But folks, the polls say differently. If you believe all of the polls, and I'm skeptical of most of them, the polls show that Donald Trump is in the lead, that he has gained a lot since the WikiLeaks email revelations, and now, in particular, this latest revelation with Hillary Clinton. The last thing that she could possibly expect 11 days out till the election, when this hit on Friday, was for her email case to be reopened by FBI Director James Comey. It is unbelievable, but I want you to hear how Donald Trump responded to the news this past Friday about the email investigation being reopened. Let's listen.
I need to open with a very critical breaking news announcement. The FBI has just sent a letter to Congress informing them that they have discovered new emails pertaining to the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's investigation. And they are reopening the case into her criminal and illegal conduct that threatens the security of the United States of America. Hillary Clinton's corruption is on a scale we have never seen before. We must not let her take her criminal scheme into the Oval Office. I have great respect for the fact that the FBI and the Department of Justice are now willing to have the courage to right the horrible mistake that they made. This was a grave miscarriage of justice that the American people fully understood. And it is everybody's hope that it is about to be corrected.
Well, this latest revelation about these possibly new related emails, as James Comey wrote in his letter, he's going to do an investigation to see if these emails, and there are thousands of them, are significant. That will take the greater part of the rest of this year. I don't think there will be any major announcement about anything before this campaign starts. It will be clearly toward the end of the year. But what this means, let's just pretend worst case scenario that Hillary wins on November 8th. What this means is that she is going to still be under investigation, and if she wins and takes the oath of office, she could be indicted, she could be arrested for what these emails may say in relationship to her. That's a big scenario that could take place yet within the next few months, but let's hope and pray that the Clinton empire is going to crumble, that this is the first real cracks that will lead to crumbling, and that we won't have to go through that, but that the biggest shocker of the year would be that Donald Trump surges into the lead and wins on November 8th, and then as a result, Hillary will lose. And if those emails have crossed the line, breaking the law in any way, Hillary will not only lose the election, but she will go to prison. And this is what could happen within the next week. Can you believe what's happening? Well, listen to what Hillary had to say when she came across this news about this email. I want you to hear how bold she got with the FBI director, which is kind of a preview of who she really is and how she will be if she becomes president. Let's listen.
I have now seen Director Comey's letter to Congress. We are 11 days out from perhaps the most important national election of our lifetimes. Voting is already underway in our country. So the American people deserve to get the full and complete facts immediately. The director himself has said he doesn't know whether the emails referenced in his letter are significant or not. I'm confident whatever they are will not change the conclusion reached in July. Therefore, it's imperative that the Bureau explain this issue in question, whatever it is, without any delay. So I look forward to moving forward to focus on the important challenges facing the American people, winning on November 8th, and working with all Americans to build a better future for our country. We have not been contacted.
Interesting how she continues the same rhetoric. It's serious, Hillary. This is very serious for an FBI director to make this announcement some 11 days out before an election, and you're blowing it off as we just need to get back to business as normal, but you're going to tell me what's in those emails and you're going to let us know. Well, guess what? In an ongoing investigation, the FBI director has he is not allowed to share that information with you, Hillary. He's under no obligation to make a public announcement about it. It's an ongoing investigation, Mrs. Clinton. And guess what? You're going to have to sweat it out, because that's what happens. You created this problem yourself with not truthful with the FBI about the emails. So don't whine and complain now when it becomes public again. You have no one to blame but yourself. I want you to hear now a program on Hannity on Friday night about the emails when this story first broke. We're going to listen to it right now on The Cross in the Desert.
I have great respect for the FBI for righting this wrong. The American people fully understand her corruption, and we hope all justice will finally be served.
Donald Trump campaigning. I was talking to Doug Shaw earlier today in Maine, where he praised the FBI for reopening its criminal investigation into Hillary Clinton after new emails were discovered during the Bureau's sexting investigation, they say, into Uma Abedin's husband, Weiner. Joining us now with reaction, the chief counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow, Fox News contributor Doug Schoen, the host of Justice with Judge Jeanine, Judge Jeanine Pirro. Judge, you got a lot to say on this. Why are you laughing?
Well, I'll tell you. I can't believe for one minute, Sean, that this is about something they found in the investigation of this pedophile, Uma Abedin's husband. I think it's deeper than this. I think there's more than this that's involved. Because for Jim Comey to come out in 11 days before a presidential election and understand that
it's got
to
be big.
It's got to be big. Now, big in the sense that they could arrest her, they could indict her, they could send her to jail. They already had that. But the FBI has already destroyed evidence. They've given everyone immunity. They basically said, oh, forget about it. It's no big deal. They had her by the short
the
hairs
answer
and they let her
is
go.
The FBI,
so why now?
Well, why is it because of WikiLeaks? By the way, I misspoke. Eight-Way Pundit had reported via Russia Today, a reporter in London, that Julian Assange would release emails that could prove to get enough evidence to get her arrested. WikiLeaks is watching.
Yeah.
They actually called and told us, no, that was from
some time ago,
and that's not true. So I apologize. Want to make sure we get everything right. Jay Sekulow, from the legal side, you and I have discussed at length, in detail, the crimes that we know were committed here.
Yep.
We were both shocked at what James Comey did. Why is he reopening it? Is it in part because of WikiLeaks? And are they not telling us, are they using the Uma Abedin Weiner emails to obfuscate what is an opportunity? They've been shown up by WikiLeaks in a lot of ways and probably fear that they may be embarrassed further.
Well, I said from the beginning that the investigation by the FBI and the Hillary Clinton email scandal was a faux investigation, a fake investigation. Obviously, that's the case, because whether it's WikiLeaks, which it well could be, or whether it's information from Uma Abedin, ask yourself this question. How did the FBI not ask for and demand Uma Abedin's personal email accounts, as well as her
device? How did they agree to destroy
evidence
of other people? How did they? Who destroys evidence in a case?
By the way, that's called obstruction of justice if anybody else did it. Sean, here's what needs to happen. Tonight, a grand jury needs to be impaneled, number one. Number two, a special prosecutor needs to be appointed immediately. Number three, James Comey, Loretta Lynch, and Deputy of the Director of the FBI, McCabe, need to not be involved in this process. I mean, a lot of people are praising James Comey because he opened it up. Let's cut the nonsense. The whole thing is ridiculous. And I'll tell you something, and you know this, John. I've been critical of where I thought Donald Trump was off point and off message. But this, it goes beyond the politics. Doug will address that. This goes to the heart of our constitutional republic. And you don't do this in the United States of America. So if they reopened it, whether it's WikiLeaks, whether it's Huma Abedin, it has to be really significant. And I think 11 days out, even though the FBI director is saying we're just looking at it, for them to do this, it has to be big.
Doug?
Period.
Look, Hillary's going to be elected. She's been under criminal investigation by the FBI for the bulk of the campaign. And, you know, she's had a steady lead. Okay. It's 11 days out.
And she, she may get elected.
Yeah.
But if crimes are committed, maybe before she gets into office, she's going to be indicted. Maybe while she's in office, she's going to be indicted. What, does Barack Hussein Obama give her a pardon as he leaves office?
He can.
He could. That's right. Could she give herself a pardon?
All of that could happen. But right now,
really?
About the politics.
Is that what you want? Is that what you want for your country?
I want her elected.
Is that what? Is she? Wait a minute.
Don't waste your time. She's not going to get elected.
Yes, she
is. It's the independents right now who are going to say, I have Clinton fatigue. I am so sick and tired of all of these scandals with the Clintons. Wherever they go, there's dirt. They are a cesspool of corruptibles. Everybody around them is committing crimes.
Let me point to some basic things. Let me ask you this. Trey Gowdy got James Comey to admit crimes before his committee. But wait a minute.
But it didn't affect the polls.
Then we've got collusion,
Sean.
WikiLeaks revealed between the campaign of Hillary, the Justice Department, the State Department, and the White House.
That's why I say there's
more
to this,
and the president lied, too.
There is more to this. The FBI, saying, you know what? We're going to revolt. This is a case that demands a grand jury, a subpoena,
a
grand jury.
We're not going to get a grand jury. We're not.
Yeah, I think we're on the precipice of a constitutional crisis if a grand jury is not impaneled and this is not handled correctly within our judicial system. We are at a precipice of a constitutional crisis.
What did you think, Jay, of Comey? Remember, we watched Comey 13 of the 15 minutes. I'm saying, oh, my... He's going to pull the trigger. He's going to go forward with a recommendation to the Justice Department to indict her. He pulls back at the end. Then he gets nailed by Trey Gowdy in committee, and Trey Gowdy gets him to admit, she committed a number of crimes and lied a number of times. Now we find out even more about all of this. Yeah. And then we got Terry McAuliffe gets money from Hillary, raises for a PAC, gives to the guy that's in charge of the investigation. This is not a banana republic, Jay. We are a constitutional republic.
Right.
The rule of law should matter. There shouldn't be two sets of law for everybody watching this show and Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And that's what it seems to be.
So Ben Franklin famously said, it's a constitutional republic, madam, if you can keep it, when he was asked what kind of government we have. The question that I think the American public is asking themselves tonight is, are we going to be a constitutional republic? Because at the end of the day, Sean, what James Comey did today by reopening it, which some on the right are praising as a great thing.
Did he do it to save his own ass and reputation? That's what I want to know.
This isn't about James Comey standing up and saying, I am here as a champion of justice.
Is it because WikiLeaks was going to expose the fraud?
He has to explain.
You got it.
He owes it to us to explain. Why
the FBI got the information?
Why not have a special prosecutor? Would you be against that?
I would be against it now until he explains what he's doing.
He can. He's in the middle of the
Maybe a special prosecutor to look at the FBI.
And Bill Clinton needs to stop getting on.
A special prosecutor to look at the behavior of the FBI.
Unbelievable exchange. A heated exchange on Hannity last Friday. But let's evaluate this just a little bit. I cannot believe that Doug Schoen would endorse Hillary after all of this. But it just seems to me that our culture, and I'm thinking of a significant part of our culture, there's a lot of uninformed, low-information voters that no matter what is revealed about Clinton, about Hillary, and her past and her present, because she's a woman, they will vote for her. This would be so historic. She's the first woman president. They would completely turn away from what is true. They would completely ignore the corruption, the trail of corruption that she leaves everywhere she goes. And think about it. What is wrong with our culture? They are taking people that lie, that bear false witness, that are corrupt, and they're saying, I want you to be my president. That doesn't mean that Donald Trump is perfect, and he doesn't have a great, clean track record, but he's far better qualified. He loves our country. He loves our veterans. He wants jobs to return here. He is for us. He doesn't leave the trail of corruption that the Clintons leave. But yet, it's amazing how our culture can react to this. As I sit here, I can only hope and pray that their eyes will get opened, that this would be disastrous to elect and put a man or a woman in office with such corruption in the Clinton Foundation. Everywhere the Clintons have gone, corruption has followed. Why do we want that as a president? Our country is in serious, serious danger, a national security danger with terrorist attacks and bringing in Syrian refugees. And all of the things that she wants to do will do nothing but destroy our country. It's just that serious. And this is not an extreme. And this is not fanaticism. This is not an overreacting. This is the way it will be. Now, I want to take us back to July of this year, when James Comey was testifying before Congress about, and I want you to hear this very important exchange as Trey Gowdy, a senator, grilled him. And listen to what James Comey had to admit about Hillary. This is a wonderful exchange, and you want to hear this. Listen very carefully.
Mr. Gowdy for 5 minutes.
Good morning, Director Comey. Secretary Clinton said she never sent or received any classified information over her private email. Was that true?
Our investigation found that there was classified information sent.
So it was not true.
Right. That's what I said.
Okay. Well, I'm looking for a little shorter answer, so you and I are not here quite as long. Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true. There were a small number of portion markings on, I think, three of the documents.
Secretary Clinton said, I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
There was classified material emailed.
Secretary Clinton said she used just one device. Was that true?
She used multiple devices during the 4 years of her term as Secretary of State.
Secretary Clinton said all work-related emails were returned to the State Department. Was that true?
No, we found work-related emails, thousands, that were not returned.
Secretary Clinton said neither she nor anyone else deleted work-related emails from her personal account. Was that true?
That's a harder one to answer. We found traces of work-related emails on devices or in Slack space, whether they were deleted or whether when a server was changed out, something happened to them. There's no doubt that they're work-related emails that were removed electronically from the email system.
Secretary Clinton said her lawyers read every one of the emails and were overly inclusive. Did her lawyers read the email content individually?
No.
Well, in the interest of time, and because I have a plane to catch tomorrow afternoon, I'm not going to go through any more of the false statements, but I am going to ask you to put on your old hat. False exculpatory statements, they are used for what?
Well, either for a substantive prosecution or for evidence of intent in a criminal prosecution.
Exactly. Intent and consciousness of guilt, right? Is that right?
Right.
Consciousness of guilt and intent. Mm-hmm. In your old job, you would prove intent, as you just referenced, by showing the jury evidence of a complex scheme that was designed for the very purpose of concealing the public record. And you would be arguing, in addition to concealment, the destruction that you and I just talked about, or certainly the failure to preserve. You would argue all of that under the heading of content. You would also be arguing the pervasiveness of the scheme, when it started, when it ended, and the number of emails, whether they were originally classified or upclassified. You would argue all of that under the heading of intent. You would also probably, under common scheme or plan, argue the burn bags of daily calendar entries or the missing daily calendar entries as a common scheme or plan to conceal.
This is amazing. Every question, every point that Trey Gowdy made, and James Comey had to admit that what Hillary said was not true. And then he proceeds to talk about intent, which many of us believe was sufficient evidence for her to be indicted. I just wanted you to hear that because it is amazing how this woman feels that she is above the law in everything she does. And the corruption and the pay-to-play goes so deep that many people feel that she has paid to play to get off of every single accusation against her, including this FBI investigation, possibly was paid to play as well. Remember who met with Loretta Lynch just prior to her testimony, and that was her husband, Bill Clinton, on a plane, on a tarmac, a few days before she was to testify in the FBI investigation. It all leads to one thing. The Clintons feel that they are above the law, and the corruption goes just that deep. I want us to hear now an interview just recently in the last few days on the Kelly File with Megyn Kelly as she interviewed Trey Gowdy, the one you just heard, grilling James Comey. She interviewed Trey Gowdy on the latest revelations of the email investigation being reopened. Let's listen.
Member of the House Oversight Committee and the former chair of the Select Committee on Benghazi. Great to see you tonight, sir. Thank you for being with us. Your reaction now,
yes, ma'am,
to this news about the FBI.
Well, I think Director Comey did the right thing in supplementing his testimony. Remember, Megan, Commissioner Koskinen is in trouble because he did not take the step of supplementing his congressional testimony. Yeah, but beyond that, his letter is pretty cryptic. It's an unrelated investigation. He has not confirmed that it's the Anthony Weiner sexting investigation, and he hasn't even confirmed yet that the information is significant. So I appreciate the fact that he updated Congress, but other than that, I'm going to let the Bureau do their job.
How extraordinary is this?
Well, it's pretty extraordinary because Secretary Clinton had an extraordinary email arrangement with herself, and she is the author of her own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that's happened since then is the natural probable consequence mm-hmm. of deciding you're going to have a rogue email system. So I understand she's upset, and I understand she doesn't like the timing, but she need look no further than herself.
How is it possible, in your view, as a former prosecutor, that Huma Abedin, who was under subpoena, would not have produced her home computer or directed the FBI to that device as relevant when they were seeking all of her documents?
Well, you can even go back beyond that. Remember, the State Department allegedly went back to all of the top aides, the seventh floor principals at the State Department, to try to recreate the record. They missed it as well. I'm reluctant to speculate because I don't like to do that as a former prosecutor, but it may have been emails that were deleted. Remember, Secretary Clinton said she turned over all work-related emails. We now know that thousands were deleted, and for all I know, this tranche may have been among those that were deleted, and therefore the Bureau did not have access to them originally.
Because you cannot get any closer to Hillary Clinton than Huma Abedin. I mean, you can't, like, that's her, it's her right-hand person, it's her closest aide, they're like family. I mean, this would be the one of the first places you would look when you were turned on to the fact that there was a secret server to find the relevant documents. And it's inconceivable to me that the FBI did not ask her for it, and if she knowingly withheld the disclosure of this device or failed to search it, there are all sorts of issues there. What's going to happen next? Because you and I both know this thing doesn't get resolved in 11 days. Does Comey need to come out and say more about it, as Hillary is demanding? And if he doesn't, what happens over the next 11 days?
Well, she's welcome to tell us what would be on that computer. I mean, Director Comey's not the only person who would know what's on Anthony Weiner's computer. I mean, Secretary Clinton's welcome to hold a press conference tomorrow and say, it may be this, because Huma and I discussed this. So he cannot confirm or deny the existence of an investigation. That's DOJ rules. And Secretary Clinton knows he cannot produce the information in the middle of an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit, to me, Megan, I mean, it's just the same person who said I neither sent nor received classified information. Mm-hmm. It's the same person who said I turned over all my work-related emails, only had one device, my lawyers went through everything. That's the same person calling that now wants all of this public disclosure, the same person who went to great lengths to make sure that these emails were private, now all of a sudden wants it all made public. It's just too rich.
She denied it. I mean, she dodged it tonight when she was asked, have you spoken with Uma? And, I mean, you know how it is. I have a right-hand woman here, too. And if my right-hand person, my assistant, found herself in this position, and I, because of my decisions, I'd say, hey, Abby, what the hell is on your computer? And then I come out and explain, because there's only 11 days to the election. And this is a dodge. Hillary, you raise a good point. Hillary and Huma are in charge of that information, and they do know, at least her right-hand person, knows what was on her home computer. And she does. They can't just point to Comey saying, you need to disclose more. I'll give you the final word, sir.
Well, I mean, it's easy to ask people you know cannot disclose things to do so. I mean, that makes her look transparent. But if it's a day that ends in Y, you can rest assured she's talked to Uma Abedin and Cheryl Mills. She knows exactly what is on those computers, just like her lawyers know what was deleted from the Platte River network. And if she's dying for us to know what she and Uma Abedin were doing on Anthony Weiner's computer, she's welcome to tell us.
Just tell us. Congressman Trey Gowdy.
The highlights of that interview are amazing, a great exchange between Megyn Kelly and Trey Gowdy. The revelations of what has been happening in this campaign, I'm telling you, I wish that I had came up with these ideas for a novel and wrote this. You know, with all of these things that have happened in this campaign, I'm sure this would be a best-selling novel. I could retire for the rest of my life and just do this and bring you my programs every day. I wish I could have thought of this myself, but you can't believe what will happen next. Here is Monday, Halloween. What is going to happen next? I mean, you think you've heard everything, but WikiLeaks is not done with their revelations. They may have the kill shot. We had the bomb drop with the FBI, the bombshell, just last Friday. Who knows what will be next? This is unbelievable. Well, a week before the campaign, you know how things are. The latest dirt's going to come out. So just hang tight. Something else will come out before November 8th. It's unbelievable. I want to transition right now to feature for the last part of the program here just one of my favorite contemporary Christian worship artists, and that is Chris Tomlin. This is his 13th CD, his project, and it's called Never Lose Sight, and it is phenomenal. I love the way that Chris writes his music because he is the kind of musician that is not in it, if you will, for entertainment. It's worship. He always keeps the heart of the gospel in his songs. Now, you don't have to maybe write every song that way, but Chris desires to do that because our nation, our hearts need healing. We need to have the truth in our hearts at all times. And in this new CD, Never Lose Sight, it is not anything different from anything else. I want you to hear Chris Tomlin right now for a couple of minutes describe the major themes of his new CD, Never Lose Sight. Let's listen.
You know, this is, I was thinking when I was looking at all my albums that I've done in the past, I think this is number 13, which is amazing. You know, that's just something in itself to just say thank you, God, that after this many years and this many songs that, you know, that still being able to do it. And I feel so passionate about it. I love this record as much as any record in the past, maybe even more. It's been a real amazing process of making this music. The same heart goes behind all my records, and especially in this album, just trying to write songs that would, you know, that would find their way into the church, that would find their way and give voice to people to worship God. It's always been that way for me. And the idea of Never Lose Sight is this idea of never lose sight of the cross, never lose sight of the mercy of God. It's easy to kind of just keep our eyes kind of just on what's in front of us, but never lose sight that what is unseen is so much greater than what is seen. Never lose sight that with God, all things are possible. Never lose sight that the healing that you most desire in your life only comes from one place, and that's Jesus. Never lose sight of the mercy of God, the grace of God. Never lose sight of Jesus and the cross.
Well, a little bit of background information about Chris Tomlin, because some of you may not know a whole lot about him. He is an American contemporary Christian artist, worship leader, and songwriter from Grand Saline, Texas. He has sold 30 million records, and he's only 44 years old. He is a former staff member at Austin Stone Community Church. He signed to EMI's Six Step Records. And you notice, if you've listened to many of the passion events across the world produced by Lou Giglio, he leads worship at many of those. And, of course, you've heard his well-known songs, How Great Is Our God, Jesus Messiah, Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone, Our God, which was co-written with Matt Redman. Whom Shall I Fear? From Burning Lights, God of Angel Armies. Now, he is currently still a Passion City worship leader in Atlanta, Georgia, with his best friend, producer Louis Giglio, Kristen Stanfill, Christy Knuckles, and Brent Yonkers. He was awarded Male Vocalist of the Year back in 2006, 2007, a Dove Award winner in 2008, and a Grammy Award winner for Best Contemporary Christian Music Album in 2012. So this man is amazing. He's married. He has a little child. And his wife's name is Anna. I'm sorry if I misquote you there, Chris. But he is an amazing individual. And the more I listen to him, by the way, it was Lauren Bricken he got married to in November of 2010. They're going to be married 6 years next month, Lauren Bricken. And they have a little child named Ashlyn Alexandra Tomlin. She was born on September 22nd, 2011. So just some facts behind the scenes about Chris Tomlin. He said the theme of this album is the work of Christ at Calvary's cross, which is one of the songs, God of Calvary. He wants to keep the focus on the mercy of God. And I love it that his albums are focused on Christian content, on doctrine, on truth, because when you sing the truth, that is something very special. So, without any further explanation, we're going to listen to four cuts from the new Chris Tomlin CD, Never Lose Sight, and this first one is called Jesus.
There is a truth older than the ages. There is a promise of things yet to come. There is one born for our salvation. There is a light that overwhelms the darkness. There is
Tomlin, new music from Never Lose Sight, talking about Jesus, the way, the truth, and the life. He is everything to us. He's the reason for our hope, our life, our salvation. We're going to hear another song now from Never Lose Sight. This is talking about our heavenly home. One day, God will wipe away all the tears from our eyes. There will be no more sorrow, our death, our pain. And that is something we look forward to. And sometimes we're so preoccupied with our life here. We're so focused that it consumes us. We need to keep our focus on our heavenly home. And that's something we look forward to. This is Chris Tomlin singing about home.
Not what it was meant to be. All this pain, all this suffering. There's a better place waiting for me in heaven.
amazing song, isn't it? And it tells the truth, because the Bible in Revelation chapter 21 and chapter 22 describe what Chris is speaking about. And I love the promise of Revelation 21. It says, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. For the former things have passed away. And he who seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. That is our great God, who takes beauty from the ashes of our suffering, promises us he will make everything new. This next song is the heart of, I think, the message on Never Lose Sight. It is the mercy of God at the cross of Christ. This is a truth we can never compromise and never lose sight of. So a good name for the CD, right? This is the message of hope and forgiveness and freedom. This is a song called God of Calvary.
Good.
Chris Tomlin from Never Lose Sight, a song called God of Calvary, keeping the focus, the central message of this CD on the work of Jesus, his death on the cross, his resurrection. It is the gospel. And this is what I admire so much about Chris. He doesn't compromise the message. 13 CDs later, he is still singing and worshiping God in spirit and truth with songs that all of us need to be reminded of every day, the message of Christ and his death on the cross, his great act of love and forgiveness on our behalf. This last song from Never Lose Sight is one that he's been performing for the last year or so before the release of the CD. And I saw Chris this past summer at Six Flags, and it was an incredible hour. It was just an hour-long concert. It was a very hot day. And this is one of the best songs that he played at that concert. I remember just looking at the audience in awe of the lyrics and just in such a mood of worship as he sang about this song. And this song is called Good, Good Father. And I love this song because our Heavenly Father is so good to us. Sometimes we are in situations where earthly fathers cruel and abusive to us. But when we become a believer in Jesus Christ, we have a new spiritual father who is good to us all the time. And I think that's the message of this song. It's the last song on our feature today. This is Chris Tomlin and Good, Good Father from Never Lose Sight. Chris Tomlin, Good Good Father from Never Lose Sight, is truly one of the best songs on the CD. What rich lyrics and rich imagery. I'm thinking of the parable of the prodigal son that Jesus taught about the unconditional love of God, and how the father, when he saw his son in such need, who had wasted his inheritance in luxurious, indecent living, the father forgave him. And there's an imagery in that beautiful, beautiful story of the prodigal son where the father is running towards the son to embrace and love him and bring him home again. And I think of that song by Chris Tomlin. That's that imagery I see there. You know, the Bible says in 1 John 3:1, see what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. This is such a rich imagery. We are children of God, adopted children, sons and daughters of God, by the Spirit into the family of God when we place our faith in Jesus Christ. We are forgiven. We are redeemed. We are blood bought. We are family. See how great the Father's love is for you and for I. The Bible goes on to speak that, beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. We think of God, and you think of your Father. What is the image that comes to your mind? In my book, The Cross in the Desert, I talked about contrasting the love of God with what Muslims are taught. And my Iranian friend mentioned to me an incident she had in school as a young child. When the teacher was talking about properly wearing the hijab to cover your hair, to cover your skin, and then she warned the class, if you don't wear your hijab properly, then in the judgment, Allah will dangle you by your hair for the fires of hell. That story stayed with my Iranian friend, and I put that story in my book to illustrate the terror and the dread that many Muslims have when they think of an image of God. Yet the Bible says the absolute obvious difference. It is the opposite. God is holy. Yes, he is. But the Bible portrays God as a God of love and not one that we should be terrified by. Now, let me try to unpack that for you just a little bit before we end today. In the Bible, we do see people that fear God. But when we talk about the word fear, it means reverence. It means to recognize he is our God, that he is holy, and that we are to fear him in that sense. It's a reverence. It is not a slavish fear. Now, if you're not a believer and you've never came into the family of God through faith in Christ, then there is a certain dread and terror because God is absolutely holy. But once we become his children, once we are saved and we are given that free gift of unconditional love and salvation, there is a reverence of God, but not a holy dread and a fear as we once had outside of the family of God. And I hope that helps you today, because what your image of God is very important. Your image of God should be one of a God who has his arms wide open to forgive you, to love you, and to bless you. Because we can come to him, and we can come to his throne because of what Jesus did. And so I'm excited about this new CD by Chris Tomlin, and I hope I've whetted your appetite that you're going to go out and get it right away. I know we offer it for sale at the bookstore where I work, Family Christian, and it's also up on iTunes. But you can actually go to YouTube, and you can actually watch some of the videos, excuse me, and the lyrics to the song. And there's actually some acoustic versions of what you heard today. As always, I love to present good, inspiring, and truthful Christian music on my program, because it's part and parcel of what The Cross in the Desert is all about. Well, in wrapping it up today, we've talked about some pretty serious issues. We've talked about what's happening in Iran with Golrokh Ebrahimi, please go to my Facebook page and read the complete story. You may have to scroll down a little bit. I will repost it later. And we also talked about the Iranian dual citizens, the father and his son that are now in prison in Iran. And it is so sad. I want you to remember to pray for Nazanin Ratcliffe. She's a dual citizen from the UK. She is in prison in Iran. She has been sentenced to 5 years. They accused her of being a spy, which certainly she wasn't. She only left the UK to visit her parents in Iran. But this is what's happening. This is what the Iranian regime is doing, is spreading terror and fear into the hearts of families whose loved ones are in prison for crimes they did not commit. And they feel they have the upper hand because of the nuclear deal. Please pray for them. And you know what? We need to reach out and pray for our adversaries as well. And I've talked an awful lot about Hillary Clinton and the danger her administration poses, her philosophy poses. It's very dangerous. But let's also remember to reach out and pray for her as well. You may say, whoa, wait a minute. Yes, yes. Pray that God will touch her heart and mind and soul to come away from this corruption. We pray for everyone here on the cross in the desert. There is no discrimination. What we do here is expose the truth, and we do it very vigorously because the truth is so important to contend for. So I want to thank you, Vito, my good friend from the Radio Jihad Network. Thank you, sir, for being a guest here today, for listening to the program in the chat room. Thank everyone here that has stopped by and spent their Monday with me today. And as always, I love to hear from you. Please come to my Facebook page. Please look at the stories up there. It's not only about the election. It's also about my Iranian friends and the issues that you need to read and to pray about, because that's what the cross in the desert is all about. I hope to see you again on Thursday for the next Cross in the Desert. Next Monday, Sebastian Gorka will be my guest. You don't want to miss that program. God bless everyone. Have an incredible week, and I will see you on the next Cross in the Desert.
Of his head.